time to another episode of Inside the Recording Studio. I am Jody Whitesides, and with me, as always, is Mr. Chris Hellstrom. How are you today, Chris?
Doing very well. You sounded a little bit like Fat Albert there.
Yeah, I was going for something different.
Right. All right. Well, there you go. I'm good. How are you doing?
Rocking on. Got to make a few turns this morning before we started, and now I'm ready to dive in to our
sweet. Well, before we started today, I pulled the trigger on a new console plugin, actually.
Did you?
because Plugging the Lions had a sale, and it was like, huh, I can get an API for $30. Sold.
There you go.
That's the topic of today, isn't it?
Making the case for consoles?
Yeah.
All right.
And using them. You and I talk a lot about how we favor that workflow these days.
Yes.
Like, why is it for you that you favor that right now? Or why does that feel right at this point?
The amount of plugins that I use has dropped dramatically. So processing power makes a big difference. Not that computers can't handle a lot of processing most of the time today. It's a matter of interface, I think. Easier to deal with a singular interface that looks the same across multiple channels rather than having separate compressors and EQs for all kinds of different things. It's a simplistic approach for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. To me, that started changing a bit when I jumped on board with the virtual mix rack from Slate Digital. I struggled with the idea initially at first, I think, of having just one plugin window and having all the components there. Mm-hmm. Once I got over and realized how convenient it was to have everything in one window, it actually sped up my workflow.
I agree with
that. A fair bit.
Yeah.
There was that. And then, of course, I've made a huge case here several times about how I like the SSL 4000E plugin from Plugin Alliance and how I can get the results that I hear in my head pretty quickly by just having that one window. That was the introduction of that for me. Besides the workflow, what do you think, if any, are the benefits to the sound as opposed to you just being able to get there faster or whatever? Do you think that the sound of that said console is that impactful?
Yes, to an extent. And I have to qualify it with also a no. The reason I say this is a lot of people look to the era when music was recorded on tape using consoles and things were heavily expensive.
Yes.
It was hard to jump into the game at that point, so to speak. Lots of albums that people hold in high, high regard prior to the DAW revolution, so to speak, and even prior to the emulation revolution, look to albums that they love that were recorded on certain consoles. And even today, with a lot of classic music, as it's now referred to, people, if they're diving into learning about who did what and what did they use, will find various consoles are all sonically part of the chain that occurred to create that album sound.
I agree with that. I think as a caveat to that, the danger can come in when we sort of conflate an album that we like. Let's say that it's, you know, something by Queen or whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, that's such a great album.
Done on a Trident, I think, right? Early Queen
stuff.
Well,
I think some, they did a bunch of stuff on Neves as well, I know. But so it's like thinking about, oh, if I only have a Neve, that would get that sound.
Right. That's the wrong approach to thinking. And that's where my qualified no comes from.
Right. Yeah. So we agree on that. And I think that is in today's day and age. Like I just mentioned, oh, I just pulled the plug and bought another. Oh, I bought a new console for $30. Right. So that's just me being the person I am. I just like to have things.
GDS, man.
Yeah. Assuming that we need to have all of these options to be able to produce a decent mix, I think it's the wrong way to go down. But one thing I want to touch on as well is obviously there is a sound of the consoles, like that, say a Neve sound different than an SSL or what have you. The biggest difference is one of workflow. And I think it's something to keep in mind that when these consoles were made, there was obviously technological advancements in trying new things and trying different preamps and all this. But it was also a big part of the design where you could add different routing and you can send to different places easier in a certain console, or, oh, we have a compressor in line on each channel as opposed to something different, right? Right. And that's why I think certain studios or certain engineers and things favored certain consoles because they could do things with them.
Yeah.
And all of them sounded good. So it wasn't like, oh, it has to be a Neve or I won't be able to do it. Right. I don't think that was the case, right?
I think a lot of console purchases of actual hardware consoles had more to do with fitting the workflow of the person that owned the studio and whether they liked that particular workflow.
Yeah, but I think it can also go back even further than that, where it's like when we had Adam Mosley on the show and he was talking about he was working at a studio in London and they had the Trident desk.
Right.
He cut his teeth on that, right? And he knew that inside and out. So people just, if you got into that studio and work, guess what? You're learning that console.
Exactly.
You know, it can go both ways there. But now, obviously, when we're dealing with the software world, all of these sort of obstacles are removed and the flexibility of a certain console is perhaps less important. Now we have everything in a plug-in window as well. Mm-hmm. So what would you say then, like, when it comes to all this, like the sound of the consoles, what would you kind of touch on?
There are sonic differences.
Sure.
Generally speaking, on a per channel strip basis, it's very minimal.
Yeah.
You're talking maybe a 1% difference. The difference comes from when you have multiples of channel strips of a console. Then you start to define what that sound becomes just based on running a signal through the console itself, not using the EQs, not using the compressors or any other factors to it other than the transformers and the inputs and outputs of it. Those do make a minute amount of difference.
But like you said, they do add up
across track counts. Track counts.
Right.
That's where the quote-unquote sound of a console comes from. It also comes from the components that are used to manufacture a console, or in this day and age, when you're using software emulations of such, the way they've decided to emulate that sound of the hardware. And that also adds up. From console to console, they all do pretty much the same thing, depending on what elements they have in their channel strips. They all do it slightly differently as well. Meaning an EQ on an SSL 9000 is not exactly the same way EQ works on an API. It's very similar, but it's not exactly the same.
It has frequency bounce and gain and
gain and reduction and all that, and it's very similar. That's where things get into the workflow aspect of it. Some people think APIs are very, very punchy just by their nature. And some people could say the same of SSL, maybe not so much as in punch, but as in clinical pureness or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, people usually talk about sort of like the mid-range, right? Oh, mid-range punch and all of these adjectives that we can use to describe a sound, right? Mm-hmm. You bring up something there that I think is interesting and I would say is arguably more important, at least to me.
Okay.
In the way that the EQs and things work. Because
and that is,
the way, you know, let's say, for example, the SSL 4000E or G compared to the 9000J. Mm-hmm. Where there's a completely different top end and bottom end on the 9000, right? It's more open, it goes higher, and the same thing has more punch and low end in, well, in the low end, right? compared to like a 4000, which isn't as bright and airy, right? So if you're working in those frequencies, you're going to hear a difference, and that will affect how you're tweaking the high end.
Sure.
Now, if you're doing something like, and this is an example that I hear a lot, if you're doing soul or R&B or something, you want that super pristine sound, perhaps.
Right.
So the 9000 became very popular with those kind of artists, where you like that really low, punchy, low end and the top fairy dust on the end, right? It's everything building up to it, right? Yeah, but if you were trying to get that same top end on a 4000 console,
it's tougher.
It's going to be different. Those differences have a larger impact on the sound. And the same thing you mentioned there, like you said, clinical when it comes to like the SSLs. I often think about a Neve, for example, as very aggressive sounding.
Yes.
And the reason I think about it that way is you turn an EQ on a Neve and things start happening in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
You're noticing that something is happening. So just a couple of dB feels like more than a couple of dB on a different kind of console, for example. Mm-hmm. It's not as surgical as an SSL, for example, to me. I would say similar things for other consoles as well. But the EQs and how they behave, and we talk about how the 4000G has a different low end as opposed to the 4000E, that kind of thing. And you even have the brown knobs or the black knobs, and it's a different frequency curve. So I think the EQ affects that more than transformers and stuff on the console. Everything adds up a little bit. That's what I think of when I think of like the sound of the console. Ultimately, I guess it kind of comes down to how you're twisting those damn knobs to make it do what you want it to do. What are your take on that when it comes to like the sound of the consoles? Because you actually use more different ones than I tend to do. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
In terms of what I think each one sounds like?
Yeah, like when you're thinking about how do you go about making that creative decision, like this album or this track, I'm going for this sound and I'm choosing the console accordingly.
I've done it for different reasons. So there's not a singular reason as to why I choose a console for a particular song or album. To start off with, we talked about it in the past where I was remixing 30 Christmas songs across three CDs or three albums.
As you do.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
The idea behind what console I used for each album had more to do with the era of the music being from. On the album that was called Christmas Past, it was obviously everything that was already public domain. So I figured using a very old console style emulation there was a good idea.
All right.
On things called Christmas Present, which were hits that many people are familiar with, not in the public domain and relatively recent, I used a console that was not as old, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And for things that were mixed for the album Christmas Future, that was all supposed to be forward-thinking stuff. So I thought of the latest and greatest in terms of a console emulation to be used there. So I used three different consoles, one for each album. That was the reasoning behind that, was to go more for an era attitude between mm-hmm. each one. Beyond that, if it's an album or a song, what I tend to think about is what is the vibe that is needed? Does it translate to me as the vibe? Do I always get it right in that regard? No. I found recently, and we discussed this, that I was using a particular console emulation on an album that worked for the sonicness of what was being mixed, but it was harder to deal with. And I didn't just choose the easy route out by switching out the console and going to a different one. I opted to stay on that console for the entire album and figuring out where I was having the issues so that I could freely work with it without as much issue.
Yeah. But you bring up a point here that I think you're going to make later as well, where it's one of challenging yourself to kind of learn and feel good about using whatever one of these emulations that you're using.
Yeah.
And being comfortable with the sound of them. So when you made the era choice there, as you said, for that album. Mm-hmm. Did you find that you were making different creative choices as far as mixing there? Or was it more of getting the sound of this console to kind of build up over X amount of tracks? Or was it simply just one of those to kind of get in the mindset and see, okay, well, here's what I'm working with. Let's make it happen.
It's a little bit of question two or three that you just asked. And the reason I say that is part of it is building up the sonic characteristic over a bunch of channels. The other part of it is making sure that if I were to go to the hardware world in any given situation, I would like to be able to improvise freely. If you're not as familiar with a sound of a particular console, that's difficult.
Yeah.
That's where I like to build up my knowledge base, my cliff notes to Jody's ability to do whatever is essentially what it is, so that I have my own reference points of when I sit down to hardware or software, I can function on it without being completely out of water as a fish.
Yeah. Feeling like how the EQs behave and how the compressors behave if there is one and that type of thing. All right.
What about you?
Well, I'm...
Because I know you're more of a singular focus, I like this console kind of guy.
Yes. And that's not to say that I haven't tried different ones, but...
Of course
not.
You just bought a new one this morning.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see how long that one stays active or not.
Sure.
I am of the mindset that I'm comfortable with said tool. Mm-hmm. That as long as I'm comfortable with that and I can deliver with that and make decisions faster and get mixes done, I am very much comfortable in doing that. For me, I don't feel like having all Neves or all 9000 J's is going to necessarily have as big of an impact as me turning the knobs.
No, it's not.
That's my mindset, at least currently. That's where I'm sitting with that. I have to say, though, at this point, I do most of my stuff with like 4000E console. That's my favorite at the moment. Or ask me next week maybe to see API. I don't know. But at least now, I like the way they'll sound and how I can make it. The only thing that I find a little bit cumbersome is because I think I got used to the virtual mix rack in the workflow in the way that I can freely change components. So I can have the sound of the API console. I can have an API EQ in there, but I might want an 1176 or an LA2A or whatever compressor I want.
I can
and
still
that just goes into my rack now. Mm-hmm. So it is one of those things. But sometimes also, it's a great exercise, if nothing else, to just kind of make do with what you have. So if you're just telling yourself, I'm going to try my best to just make use of the SSL compressor and have that as my compressor. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be too reliant on gear, I guess. But that's my way of thinking. So as opposed to thinking... Yeah, for this track, I think a Neve console would be better suited for this. I tend to stick with one and do that one.
Right.
Half-assed, at least.
Well, and that answers the question of what console you like to use. You're saying the SSL 4000E, or you're building a modular version of something similar using the virtual mix rack.
Yeah, because all of those components for the SSL are available in the virtual mix rack. Mm-hmm. It has the channel strip, it has the dynamic section, has the EQ. So I'm like, all right, cool, there you go. If I go, I don't want to use the dynamic section of the SSL here, I want to use an 1176, and I got a few different flavors of that, or a few different flavors of an LA2A, I can easily do that in the same plug-in window. That's what I'm favoring at the moment. But I do like your mindset as well as challenging yourself to kind of work with different tools as well.
Right.
So there you go. But you mentioned a few other consoles that you'd like to work with. What's your favorite list at this point?
The ones that I tend to reach for most, in no particular order, API, the Neve VSX, which is an emulation of a Neve console by Plugin Alliance, the Focusrite. I also really like the SSL 9000 and the SSL 4000. Those are the ones I tend to gravitate towards most. Mm-hmm. That doesn't end the list by any stretch of the imagination of the ones that I have used. And we have mentioned a few of them in the past. And these are not necessarily my favorites, but like the Amec. That one I found really challenging. Because it was doing things underneath the hood that was like, what the hell's this doing? Another one that I've recently mentioned on the podcast that we've talked about is remixing with the Neve 88 RS. That one also gave me some issues initially until I got into the nature of what it was doing and finally got it together, so to speak.
Do you ever go as nutty as like, oh, I like an API on my drums, or I like insert another console here on my guitars, that type of thing? Or do you stick with at least one emulation per track?
The way it's currently designed in my workflow is one console to all the tracks. Mm-hmm. I do not mix and match as of now. Would I consider it? Sure. Am I likely to do it? I don't know. That's the better way to answer it for me right now. What about you? Sounds like you already do it.
No, I don't do that. No. Well, in the sense that
you're creating those things.
I might swap compressors and things.
In terms of swapping things, and I wouldn't say swapping, I do use 1176s, LA2s, and various other compressors and even other EQs when I deem it necessary beyond what the console is doing. And I will still use the console as the means of, am I patching this before the console, as you might do in hardware world, or am I patching it behind the console in the channel strip? Those are things that I think about and do. I just don't need to do it as often, depending upon which console I have in front of me as a template.
Again, it kind of gets you there quicker because you have everything right there and you can get, You brought up something earlier as well, and I think it's an important part to kind of stress here. You mentioned just like passing the audio through a console.
Yep.
And while that will impart some of the characteristics, which, you know, may or may not be pleasing to you, but also the mindset of you don't have to process every damn track.
No.
Right? Is that something we talk about with mixing all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you have it there, that would be one of the temptations too, right? You're inserting something and it's like, oh, I better start twisting knobs here. A lot of times you don't actually have to.
I have a fair amount of the stuff that I've been remixing as of late where I'm not using the gate and compressor on every channel. It's there.
Yeah.
It's not turned on.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with EQs. If I don't feel like it needs it, it's still running through the console like an actual console would be doing anyway, but I'm not using everything on every track.
And speaking of things building up, there's something that is part of the analog sort of circuitry that I just despise a lot of times. and that's the noise.
Sure.
Right? Because they do emulate the noise.
Some console emulations do actually emulate the noise of the console.
Thankfully, the ones that I tend to use will allow you to turn it off or at least turn it down.
Sure.
Because that's the thing. I was telling you before we started rolling here today, that was working on a mix this week, and I was like, where is that noise coming from? And it was driving me crazy.
Right.
And sure enough, it was the buildup of all the consoles that were there, and it just has that and it just bothers me. In a dance rock mix, if everything is like up at 11,
you don't hear it. Right.
But at the end of a song or something, it's like, oh my God, and it just drives me crazy. I suppose we should all be thankful that it's there because it's authentic or whatever. But
luckily, you can turn it off if you don't like it.
Yeah. What do you think are the benefits of using different consoles as opposed to just favoring just using one?
Being able to keep myself happy with a variety of spice of life.
Mm-hmm.
If I was seeing the same thing day in and day out, sure, I'd be real quick and fast on it, but I'm already that way with multiple console emulations as it is. And for me, it becomes more about the spice of life variety.
Yeah, there's something for challenging yourself and just doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's only if you're up against a deadline where you might not want to experiment. That's kind of like a given, right? Just trying something new is fun, and you might find that you end up tweaking your workflow to the better by doing something slightly different.
What about for you?
I would say the same thing that you just said. I do favor one because listening to old albums, if nobody told us what console they were mixed on, nobody would know.
Right.
So it just comes out to, is the song good? Does it sound good? Or at least interesting? that's awesome. That really all that matters. On the flip side of that, it is fun to have all of these toys and the options to have, right? So it does add variety. Is it useful? I don't know. It certainly is fun.
Yep.
One thing that I wanted to bring up, because we're talking a lot about the sound and things, and we were trying to come up with a way that to kind of implement audio examples into this episode. And we felt like it's a lot of moving parts, and it's hard to do apples and oranges. But if any of you listeners feel like, oh, you would like to hear some audio examples, let us know, and maybe we'll
do a whole in-depth episode on comparing the different sounds, so to speak.
Yeah. So if that would be helpful. And if you do that, you can't listen on your Apple earbuds or something like that. So, because it's not going to make any difference. Yeah. So last question to you, Jody, right? Uh-huh. Is the sound of the console plug, it's ultimately that important?
No.
Okay. I agree.
Is it important to sounding like a record? Yes. Is it important to which console you use? No.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with what you said there in the way that to sound like a record.
Uh-huh. Because I'm talking record, not like the modern streaming digitalness.
So you're talking like vinyl?
Yeah.
To have vinyl. Limited? Yeah. Yeah, I'd still go ahead and disagree. Okay. I think it's ultimately, it comes down to the person sitting in front of the gear turning the knobs. So the decisions that you make for that, that's ultimately more important. So if you're just using stock plugins in your DAW, you're
going to be able to deliver to that. That way, yes.
Right. It really comes down to workflow or whatever you have to be. Does it matter? Ultimately, yes or no, I guess is the answer to that. Could be both, right?
The answer is technically no.
Yes, I agree with that.
Let's move on to our Friday Farms. What have you got this week, Chris?
This is actually going to be a re-mention because I know I've had this before, but I used it this week, and it's the Black Salt Audio Silencer. Mm-hmm. It's a gate plugin specifically designed for drums, live drums, when there's always a lot of bleed, and that's just the nature of it is. But this does a ridiculously good job in helping you combat that. Silencer by Black Salt Audio, it's a cheap plugin as well. If you're doing any kind of work with live drums, just get it. It's good. I'm not paid by them to say this. It's just good. What have you found this Friday, Jody?
I've been using the Cooper Time Cube quite a bit in this past set. I thought
you said Cooper Tires. I'm like, okay, off topic, but
Cooper Time Cube, which was originally invented by Dwayne Cooper and Bill Putnam. It's a mechanical delay type of device, and it's been used on numerous big hits from 70s up until now. I've been finding that it does a really good job, and I don't have to do an insane amount of tweaking with it in order for delay items to actually work well. Thus, I'm going with the Cooper Time Cube this week.
I'm unaware of that one, but I'll have to check that out. Nice.
Oh, yeah. While we've got your attention, we ask that you go to InsideTheRecordingStudio.com and sign up for our mailing list. You'll need to be on our email list to be eligible for future giveaways, and we'll make sure you don't miss any future episodes of this amazing podcast. Send us an email at goldstar, G-O-L-D-S-T-A-R, at InsideTheRecordingStudio.com. with the word console, and you'll get something cool back in your inbox. If you have a topic or suggestion for Chris and I to explain in a future episode, contact us at the contact page, and we'll put it into consideration for a future episode. With that, I'll say see you next week.
Thanks for listening, people. Have an awesome day, and I'll talk to you later, Jody.